We're checking in on children's mental health here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The State Office of Children's Mental Health developed a feelings thermometer to help families talk about emotions and coping strategies. In a video demonstrating the thermometer, First Lady Kathy Evers asked a young girl how Governor Tony Evers would respond to feeling frustrated or tired after making hard decisions. Hayla Wilson had three tips.
You could maybe or calm down in a hot bath or listen to music.
Read, take a bath, listen to music. Kids, how about you? How do you handle feelings about being upset? Parents, how are you trying to support your kids' mental health in these times? What gaps do you see in our state's safety net for children? 800-642-1234. Linda Hall directs the Office of Children's Mental Health. Linda, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, and good morning. I'm happy to be able to be here and talk about children's well-being in Wisconsin.
Great. Let's start with the feelings thermometer that your office offered children and adults in the pandemic. Can you describe how it works?
Well, it looks like a thermometer. It has layers. Every color, every layer of it is a different color. So it identifies a feeling that you might have. Starting with really calm, feeling really calm, that's the blue zone, and then it moves up in different colors to the orange zone, you're getting frustrated, and then in the red zone at the top, you're really angry and kind of out of control. So it identifies what you might be feeling on one side, and on the other side, it identifies actions you might take to shift your mood. And what we know from research is that just identifying an activity can make a difference in your body and how you feel. And so we learned about this because we collaborate with Dr. Marcia Slattery, a child and adolescent psychiatrist at UW-Madison. And we worked with her on developing this version of the feelings thermometer. And then we started sharing it. And once the First Lady, Kathy Evers, did the video on it, we were deluged with requests for it. And we've gotten lots of stories from families about how it's working for them and how they're using it with their children. And we're also learning that the parents are using it themselves and using it with coworkers. So we're going to keep looking at it. It seems to be a tool for people that has really been advantageous at this time when we're all kind of cooped up because of the pandemic.
Linda, when that thermometer reaches the red zone, that red color, what are some suggested actions for how to respond?
Well, get into a vigorous activity. I think you heard Hala Wilson say take a hot bath.
Yeah.
That one seems to be really popular, not only with adults, but with kids, that they really feel like that that makes their body feel different and shift their moods. So the activities change for each level because, to kind of match up with what the feeling is like.
Is the goal to also help adults discuss their own feelings around kids?
Definitely. I mean, it's for the adults to also identify their feelings. We really suggest people that they tack it up on the refrigerator and take a look at it several times a day, especially in this time when we're stuck at home so much. Take your temperature several times a day. Kind of notice where you are. Do you need to shift your moods? Do you need to maybe shift your schedule for the day to accommodate how you're feeling? It's important for adults to recognize their feelings if they're going to be able to talk to kids about their feelings. And sometimes that's a challenge for some adults. So some people are really finding it useful for themselves.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about efforts to improve children's mental health this hour with Linda Hall. She directs the state office overseeing this work, children's mental health. And you can join in. What questions do you have about kids' mental health, their quality of life today? What do you want to know? 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Emmanuel in Kenosha. Hi, Emmanuel.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I am, or was, the step-parent. The kids are grown now. Two kids my wife had from her previous marriage. And it was a tough sense that there appears to be very little support from the authorities for basic discipline for the children, such as complying with court orders, going to school, and being obedient to their teachers, not to mention to us. So Dad, unfortunately, was a convicted felon who constantly instigated the kids to disobey. Police and court would pretty much throw up their hands and kick the can down to someone else. Full disclaimer, I am an immigrant, so I grew up very differently, and I'm also a reservist here. So my personal view is that a more of a society-centric, if you will, approach seems to breed better results. And that's not to discount mental health needs for kids, but I was curious what your guest thinks about perhaps a greater emphasis on the kids being more mindful of the people and their needs around them rather than this inward focus on their own feelings.
Emmanuel, thank you for that. Emmanuel, a step parent in a blended family, and wants to, you know, kind of navigate that area, Linda, about how the children can have relationships with the adults in their lives.
Yes, thank you for that. A lot of complex things going on there. We know that children's behaviors are often very strong indicators of what they're feeling inside. And what they're feeling is usually a reaction to what's happening around them. You know, our report looks at 31 indicators of social, clinical, and economic well-being that relates to children's actual well-being themselves. So when children are exhibiting behaviors that are troubling to us, we really need to get down underneath it and find out what's going on behind that. You know, one of the things that I think that our office does that is in response to some of what the caller is saying is that we put out monthly fact sheets on different issues related to children's mental health. And for example, we did one on youth justice last year. So really when kids have behaviors that end them up in the youth justice system, every fact sheet includes things about what we as parents, as adults, and as communities can do to help shape the kind of future that we want for our kids. So we really try to address these things by thinking about not just focusing just on the child, but what are the things that are happening in the family and in the community that make a difference in how that child is feeling and acting.
Linda, your annual report coming out as the pandemic spreads, cases spread, kids school from home, parents in flux. What trends should we be mindful of right now? What did you see?
Well, I need to say that our 2020 report that just came out is really our data that we use is collected at the state and national level. And so all of the data that was available to us is really pre-COVID.
Okay.
With that in mind, we were very attentive to what was happening with COVID. And what we're sad to report that even pre-COVID, we're noticing that our children are losing their sense of social connectedness. They're losing their sense of belonging, their ability to make and keep relationships. And this is important not only in terms of their having friendships, but it's also important in terms of their relationships with adults, like their teachers. And that has a profound impact on their academic and then ultimately their success as an adult. So, you know, as I said, we look at 31 indicators. There are some places where things are improving, some areas where we need to work on it. But that social connectedness is one that we are looking at. And we anticipate that in the next couple of years, as more data related to COVID does come out, that, you know, we'll see some more changes in that area.
We're spending the hour with the head of Wisconsin's Youth Mental Health Office. Linda Hall is director. We're looking at all the variables affecting children's health and well-being amid the pandemic. Are you a teacher or counselor, maybe a principal? What can you tell us about trying to reach a struggling child in these times? What resources have you turned to? How did the family respond? Is your school able to do enough to meet the needs of children's mental health? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute. On the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about children's mental health here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. More Wisconsin children are feeling depressed and sad. As years go by, the percentage of teens experiencing suicidal behaviors is also on the rise, and LGBTQ students are notably higher risk. This is from the Office of Children's Mental Health that works on the underlying problems connected to a loss of quality of life. Has your family unit been upended in the pandemic? How is your child's quality of life? How is your child doing after someone in your home had stressful COVID complications? 800-642-1234. Linda Hall directs the State Office of Children's Mental Health. She's with us for the hour. Linda, we have a huge racial equality gap in our state. And as Democratic Representative Sheila Stubbs has said on our air time and again, Wisconsin is the absolute worst place to raise a black family, and that's inexcusable. How does this equality gap affect children's mental well-being and children of color and their quality of life?
Well, unfortunately, it affects it in a really big way. And we took a special look at that in this year's report and plan to have equity in child health and well-being as a focus throughout 2021. In 2020, it became clearer than ever before that the economic, mental health, and educational and health disparities across the kids in our state are huge. In terms of educational equity, 90% of kids graduate from high school in Wisconsin, but most of the kids who don't are black. In terms of economic equity, Wisconsin ranks 50th in the nation for having the most extensive gap between black and white races, especially the children. And when it comes to mental health, 11% of black children needed but didn't receive treatment, whereas only 2% of white children didn't receive treatment. So a lot to work on. And we know that these factors, you know, these everyday living conditions, which are sometimes referred to as the social determinants of health, are critical to the mental health and well-being of our children. So we really need to get at those issues that are the underlying conditions that create the mental health challenges our kids have.
Where do you begin? Where do you start improving what you call the everyday living conditions for children?
Well, it's really, we need to be looking at the basic things that a family needs to be stable, and that's, you know, stable income, stable housing, access to mental health treatment. You know, we have a shortage of mental health providers in the state. So we're looking at those things and how can we improve that? Our role is to put the data out there and help people understand the situation. And we also play a role in trying to bring people together, both inside and outside of government, to work on these issues and create a focus so we can change, we can move the needle on some of these important factors.
We saw this new report from the Department of Public Instruction showing more than half of K-12 schools used restraint or seclusion at least once last year, affecting nearly 5,800 students. What do you make of this report?
Yeah, the statistics in there are discouraging. But I would say that our office was aware that there were issues out there. You know, we have a strong emphasis on bringing in people with lived experience of navigating the mental health system. So we have parents of children with disabilities. We have high school youth and young adults who have been through the school and mental health system as youth with disabilities. And so they've been telling us these issues were out there. What this report does is for the first time we have some more extensive data about what the extent of the issue is. And we know that part of the problem is that schools, the teachers and the professionals and the special education assistants need support, and they need more, they could use more tools in how to work with kids. So we are involved in working on mental health curriculum that we think it will have an impact on it. And we are also working with the Department of Public Instruction, especially their school support staff, on ways that we can get more information out to schools and support. The report page on the DPI website also lists a number of resources that schools can use that will help them to address these problems. So we'll be working on that with them too.
We are exploring a variety of issues around youth mental health this hour with Linda Hall as our guide. She's director of the State Office of Children's Mental Health. You can join in. Are you a teacher, a principal, a counselor? Do you think your school is doing enough to address children's mental health? Are students able to find the help they need and focus on their education? Where are the gaps? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Linda, the ratio of students who feel sad or hopeless every day has been growing over the past decade. Do you know why?
Well, we think that I mentioned social connectedness. We know that social connectedness and that sense of belonging makes a difference in how kids are functioning. We also think that the anxiety that they are experiencing because of the anxiety their families are experiencing is contributing to that sadness and depression. So, you know, it brings you right back to these everyday living conditions. If your family is struggling to pay bills and to put food on the table and to pay housing costs, that's a level of anxiety that is passed down to the kids, no matter, you know, how strong the parents are and how much they try to protect them from it. So we think those are important factors. And, you know, I'll just say that the young people, we have a core of young people working with us, helping us think about the mental health challenges that they have and their experience, their ideas about what needs to be happening. And they tell us that they want mental health to be talked about more at school, that for more adults in the school to be able to talk with them about it, and for them to get more information earlier on about how they can address their own mental health situation. So we see a lot of opportunities for making a difference in this area, but there's plenty of work to do.
How can a parent or a caregiver recognize if their child may be feeling sad or hopeless and not realizing to what extent?
Well, I think, you know, it's looking at their behaviors. You know, are they acting differently than before? Are they eating as they normally do? Are they sleeping? And if as a parent you have some concerns that your child's mental health may be in question, your first action would be to go to your pediatrician and talk with the pediatrician about it. And then after that, you might get some help from the pediatrician, their office. Maybe it's not the pediatrician exactly, but somebody in their office, a nurse, and then explore outwards from that. We have on our website, we have a map to accessing children's mental health services that really is a guide for parents who are starting to think about, do I have to be concerned here about what's happening with my kid? It's a map that kind of takes you through the steps of how to get your help for your child. And our website is at www.children.wi.gov.
You also found, though, that 62% of doctors in Wisconsin did not ask parents about their concerns with their children's behavioral issues. Why is that not happening?
Well, there are a number of factors for that, and we consulted the Wisconsin Association of Pediatricians about that because we were surprised by that figure. And what we learned is that pediatricians may actually be observing very closely what's happening and picking up cues about behavioral issues as they talk to a child and their parents. So there may be more going on than what they're actually verbally saying.
Oh, like the interpersonal, what is happening during that well check visit, for instance.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. You know, what's the child doing, you know, because again, we're back to, you know, a child's actions can give you clues to what they're actually feeling. So they may be observing that really well. Some physicians are not well trained in how to ask those questions or don't feel comfortable asking those questions. And then another major factor is that doctors are under such constraints in terms of how much time they can spend with a patient.
Yeah. We have to pause there with Linda Hall, Director of the State Office of Children's Mental Health. We will be back with her right after this news update here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show as we look at the health and well-being of children in Wisconsin. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Even before the pandemic struck, the CDC documented mental health issues like anxiety and depression on the rise in youth ages 6 to 17 nationwide, not just here in Wisconsin. And social isolation can only make these problems worse. Are children heard in the pandemic? What gaps in children's mental health services do you see in your community? Is there a shortage of providers or issues around transportation to clinics or a lack of affordable options? 800-642-1234 to join in. Linda Hall heads up the State Office of Children's Mental Health, and she's our guide this hour. Linda, we heard from Wania from DePere, called in, couldn't stay with us. And Wania says these problems are generational and that many people of color have been traumatized and that trauma is passed on to their children and grandchildren. And Wania says we need more than just access to mental health. How do we address root causes of adverse childhood experiences?
Well, she's absolutely right. We know that these things pass from one generation to the next. And in addition to addressing those everyday living conditions that are often the causes of those adverse childhood experiences, we need to address the trauma that children and their parents have experienced from them. In some sense, that's about helping mental health professionals be better equipped to work with people on trauma. Our office has done a lot of training around that. We have a team of volunteers who plan training for the workforce on trauma-informed care. We also recognize that because we have such a serious shortage of mental health professionals, that we have to look at ways beyond that to support families. And so training people who have been through these experiences to become peer supports can be very helpful to people who are living through this and trying to move beyond their traumas.
You mentioned a shortage of mental health providers, mental health workers. We've talked about this before. Is the state making any inroads there?
Yes, actually, we are seeing some small increases in the number of providers. And what we do know is that the investments that the governor and the legislature made in social workers and other supports like school psychologists and counselors has made a difference in terms of how many children are able to access a form of mental health by those people in schools. And we think that, we've talked a little bit earlier about mental health at schools. We think there are tremendous opportunities to increase children's access to someone who can at least get them started on addressing mental health issues and, you know, possibly have them with other students in a group that talks about the challenges that they have. So those are areas where, when it comes to school mental health, I think Wisconsin is actually leading compared to other states in terms of developing school mental health resources.
What about access in rural areas? What is happening there?
Well, in rural areas, with many things, there are not a lot of providers available. But we do have some examples of schools that have been able to contract with providers from neighboring areas to bring them in to work with students. During the pandemic, we have had some flexibility in terms of using telehealth to address mental health issues. So you can have somebody, you can have a mental health professional in a different part of the state, online working with kids, and that's been helpful for some.
We heard from Samantha from Whitehall, called in and couldn't stay with us. And when Samantha was in school 30 years ago, Samantha says there were mental health care systems in place to help the kids. And Samantha wouldn't have graduated without this help and is wondering why the system is failing now.
Well, I think that we know that although we have had increases in how many social workers are available at schools, we're still woefully under what the standard is. In Wisconsin, we have one social worker for about 250 kids. That's the standard, one for 250 kids. And in Wisconsin, we have one social worker for 1,300 kids. So I think it relates to the underinvestment in our schools, and when schools have to look at where are they going to make cuts because they don't have the funding they need to cover everything, it's very likely that the school support staff are the ones to be cut.
Let's look at students with disabilities and their mental health. They are almost 40% more likely to be suspended in Wisconsin. What have you learned in this area?
Well, again, we were aware from our parents we work with that there's an issue around this. We also work closely with Disability Rights Wisconsin, who has been monitoring this issue for a long time. So it's not completely surprising, but it's obviously very disturbing. And as I mentioned earlier, we are this year looking at more subsets of youth to not just look at the overall numbers, but to get down deeper and look at what are the issues. And children with disabilities, like children of color, are a subset that we're going to be paying attention to and trying to highlight those issues and bring people's attention to them.
We're discussing efforts to improve children's mental health this hour with Linda Hall. She's director of the state office overseeing this work. And you can join in with your questions about children's mental health services. Perhaps you are a parent or grandparent. Maybe you're a teacher. What resources are helping now and where is more help needed? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Linda, your report talks about the lifespan of a child. Can you explain how you break down the lifespan of a child?
Sure. Actually, the lifespan of a child was something that we were focusing on last year as we really wanted to study what is happening at different points along children's lives and where might we start to make a difference. So we took the lifespan of a child and broke it up into four areas. Children 0 to 5, 6 to 12, 12 to 18, and then 19 to 26. And we have that older age group on because many children who have mental health or serious mental health conditions when they're young are still in the children's system past age 19. And we also thought that the 26 is the break in when kids are no longer eligible to be on health care, their parents' health care.
Yeah.
So we looked at those groups And we identified what we thought were some important areas that we should be paying attention to. And we were spent the years kind of studying what are other people already doing around these issues. And so now this year, we're hoping to move from that kind of study mode to more of an action mode in terms of what can we do to really make a difference with all these age groups. And, you know, that brings us back to the social connectedness issue, because we really see that the social connectedness plays out a little bit differently in each age group, but it's always important for them, no matter which level of development they're at.
Well, with social connectedness, what would you advise parents now who can't go on play dates, who can't be in organized, you know, maybe winter sports indoors, or are having a really difficult time connecting their child with the friends they want to be around?
Yeah, so we have been working with, I mentioned earlier, Dr. Slattery, who talks with us about the three P's of parenting during the pandemic. And the three P's are predictability, purpose, and people. And with predictability, it's important for parents and families to set a schedule at home that every day you know what the schedule is going to be. So in a sense, you're somewhat replicating the kind of schedule that kids had at school. And that schedule should have work times in it. It should have play times. It should have family time. And there should be alone time for kids too. So those are some of the components you'd want in your schedule. And then with purpose, it's really helping the child, understand what their purpose is. And they may have a couple of them. One of very likely is pay attention to schoolwork and be, you know, get on your, if you're doing school remotely, be on your class, your Zoom class, and get that done. Do your assignments. You may have family responsibilities. Maybe you need to walk the dog. So that's part of your purpose. And then the people part is really more what you were talking about, is don't forget that we need to have kids stay in contact with other kids. So in your family pod, hopefully there's some kid activities that could happen between siblings.
Mm-hmm.
What else can you do? You can do Facebook. You can do kids are learning, you know, are cooking together by Facebook or doing other kinds of activities. Kids can go outside, you know, and in socially distanced ways play, you know, and get some exercise and fresh air. So it is very important to pay attention to those things for children during this time.
We're talking with Linda Hall, Director of the State Office of Children's Mental Health. Her office works across state departments to improve children and families' access to services. Is your child worried about COVID, or has a family member had a difficult hospital stay with COVID? How are the kids doing? How are you talking with them about their fears? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a moment, more conversation with Linda Hall here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kemp. Let's get back to our conversation with Linda Hall. She directs Wisconsin's Youth Mental Health Office, and her annual report reveals that Wisconsin families don't demonstrate as much resilience as compared to families across the nation, and her office is working to change that, connecting families with the resources they need. Let's bring in Ronnie now in Ashland. Hi, Ronnie.
Hi. I just wanted to thank you for having this topic, but also bring up a point with regards to social workers and school districts. First, universities have done away with a lot of the studies so that now people are limited on where they can go in order to get a certificate or get the qualifications. And then also the standards for the state of Wisconsin being significantly different than Minnesota. With regards, I believe they have to hold a master's degree in order to be a social worker in the school district, which is different for a social worker for a county. And so I was curious on your input on how can we address that in order to help school districts bring in the social workers that are desperately needed.
Ronnie, thank you for bringing that up about licensing and credentials. What is your take there, Linda?
We have heard similar things, that there are some issues around the availability of programs, and that there are a lot of bumps in the road when you're working in two states or you're moving into Wisconsin from another state. We have been working on those issues with people on the Wisconsin Mental Health Council and with the Department of Safety and Professional Services, trying to eliminate some of the barriers and increase people's ability to get licensed faster, because we know that that's important.
Have you seen any trend lines at all about getting licensed and credentialed amid the pandemic?
No, I haven't so far seen anything that's specifically related to the pandemic.
All right.
We just know that there is a shortage now. There are not as many people, going into the field as we could use, which in large part is a reflection of the level of salary and pay that people, once they're in the field, people look at other professions that pay better. So that's part of what we have to deal with in this until we need to value this higher. And that's, one of the reasons that we want to look at social connectedness again is because we want people to understand that these social connections and these everyday living conditions all come together to make a situation in which children can thrive. Mm-hmm. And so we need to invest in that.
We heard from Leslie in Wausau, who says Leslie has a child, has health care coverage, and her child's not a drug addict, not suicidal, not in trouble with the law, but struggling to find health care where they don't have to wait 6 months to get an appointment. Leslie asks, how do you reach kids who aren't in a critical emergency situation for mental health?
Unfortunately, this is a problem, not only in Wisconsin, but across the nation. Mental health is the only area where you have to prove that you're sick in order to get help. The Mental Health America calls it, we need to get to people before stage four. We wait till people are really sick before we want to give them help. And we know that, that children who have the kind of issues that she's describing and that she's trying to deal with, they're in a kind of a gap where they need help, but they can't access it. People have different, the way we do insurance in this country is also plays a factor into this, that people have to, many health insurance plans have large deductibles, so families have to pay a lot of money to get to a mental health visit before their insurance kicks in, and sometimes they just can't afford to do that. They have to pay their rent or their food bill first. So there are things in the way. Part of the reason that we focus a lot on school mental health is because we feel like that is an avenue for us to get to more children, maybe not get them an appointment, sitting in an office with a mental health professional, but hopefully getting them some support that will help them get through.
Or at least some initial screening, some triage.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's bring in Doris now in Williams Bay. Hi, Doris.
Hi there.
Hi, what's on your mind? Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, this reaches close to home because my brother's son got involved with the wrong crowd, and he turned into a cocaine addict. And I think he started before the age of 15. And I'm thinking if they could have reached him in school to tell him not to try drugs, then it would have made a difference. And also, I think that kids should be taught to obey the laws and should be taught on their own level what the laws of the land are, and that they should obey them for their own good, that they might be more law-abiding citizens instead of, like, later on becoming just getting arrested for breaking some laws.
Doris, thank you. Linda, what are the challenges around drug abuse?
They're clearly there. They're deep. They're tough when kids get into that pattern, but we know this, again, is sort of a problem that was reflected in what our previous caller said, is that there's not always the help that kids need to keep them from going down that path of getting into trouble where they get into the youth justice system. And we know so many of children in the youth justice system really have mental health issues, and that's what was behind it. So we need to pay attention to that. We need to create more avenues for people to get help with their kids before they get into trouble. And, you know, those are just critical things for us to do.
Wisconsin can send 17-year-olds to adult prison. What is the context of this pertaining to children's mental health?
We are one of only three states that send 17-year-olds to adult prison. And when they go to adult prison, they don't get mental health treatment. And our data show that 100% of the females in the youth justice system and 72% of males have unmet health issues. And they're at the risk of re-incarceration and recidivism. So it's a serious problem.
Wisconsin families are also struggling with resiliency. What are you finding there?
Yeah, we noticed this year in the data that Wisconsin families are not as resilient as families in the rest of the country. They stay hopeful less during difficult times. They don't believe that they have a lot of strengths to hold to draw on when they're having challenges, and they're not feeling as effective at being able to work to solve their problems. So, you know, this is something that we'll be looking at more in the future, because when we talked earlier about the lifespan of a child, that graphic, which you could find on our website, shows that in addition to the children, we put family resilience on there as an important factor, because if a resilient family is important to the health of a child. So we have people work with us around resiliency. We have a collective impact team that works on resiliency, and we'll be looking into these numbers more to find out what's the root cause there.
Yeah, the lifespan 0 to 26, that's many years. What can families do now, right now at this point, regardless of where they are on that lifespan? What can they do to get the mental help that they need for their child?
Well, first of all, as I said before, they start with a pediatrician or your family doctor and see if they can provide support. If you have insurance or if you're on Medicaid or BadgerCare, you should be able to access some mental health services that way. Look to what's happening at your school or in your community. You can also go to your county health department. Many counties have mental health professionals on staff. So there are a few avenues. And then, as I mentioned earlier, for a little bit more guidance around that, you could take a look at our homepage, where we have a map on how to access services.
Linda, thank you for joining us.
It has been my pleasure. I'm happy to come and talk about this, and hope that you'll have us back again sometime.
Thank you. Linda Hall, Director of the State Office of Children's Mental Health. She was appointed by Governor Evers. She's been in the position since July 2019. We have a link to the Office of Children's Mental Health 2020 Annual Report. It is at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.